Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. This is episode 30. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. And you can also follow them on Instagram at mintinc_USA. A couple of announcements before we get into today's episode. I did an IG live with Far Roots Investments LLC on Saturday. It's an investment group in LA that I'm a part of. And it was just about my personal investment journey. We talked about Far Roots Investments, why I joined, what we're up to. And I also was able to speak about my journey as a podcaster. So definitely check out their page, Four Investments LLC, on Instagram. You can see the whole replay and check it out. Let me know what you think. We also reached 9,000 followers on Instagram last week, which is crazy. We've been going at a pace of about 1,000 a week, probably over the last month. So it's been really cool. I thank you all for your support. And I'm just excited to grow and help more people. And also, updates on Dayton, Ohio. My property there is doing well. I don't have any issues with my tenants. Thankfully, they're working. They're still paying. I haven't missed any payments. They opened up Ohio, I believe. So things are more or less back to normal in the state in many ways. So very glad about that. My business partner and I are looking for deals. We have noticed a lot of homes are coming on the market, which is interesting. But we're mostly, right now, we're focused on getting financing. That's kind of been a challenge for us. But you know, we'll hit it again this week, look at what's out there and call up some more banks. Definitely don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment. It'll help us reach more people and move up in the rankings. So really appreciate you all commenting and sharing with your friends. And we're also on Twitter. So follow us on Twitter. Take a second to follow there at Bred Podcast, at BRED Podcast. I really enjoy just engaging with people. It's a different vibe. It's a different kind of vibe than Instagram. So if you have Twitter, definitely follow there. And of course on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And check out the sources below in the show notes. A lot of different resources to help you with real estate investments, with hot side hustles, with credit. So definitely make sure you take advantage and also sign up for our email list. By signing up for our email list, you'll get discounts, additional content, resources, and our newsletter that goes out periodically. Usually when any of our partners has a sale or there's any big news going on, I tell the email list first. So you definitely want to make sure you're on the email list. Like anything I put on Instagram, the email list has seen it first. So definitely want to make sure you take advantage of that. So without further ado, I know you'll get a whole lot out of this episode. Let's get into it. All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited for this episode today. Here with me, I have Brian Robinson, also known as the infamous CPA out of Chicago. Brian, appreciate you coming on, man.
Man, thank you for having me. Super excited to be here. Definitely looking forward to a dope conversation.
For sure, for sure. So first, I would just love to hear more about your childhood, what that was like, and what you saw, or maybe what you didn't see, that shaped your view of building wealth.
Okay. So I grew up, well, I was born in Harvey, Illinois, spent most of my adolescence in the south suburbs of Chicago, low-income background. I did have both parents, luckily, but they were separated. So I kind of bounced from, you know, home to home, from my dad to my mom. So growing up, wealth building or having money was something, you know, really far-fetched. So I grew up in a household where we were really big on materialism. So if we didn't have, you know, the finances, even if we were living check to check, my mom always made sure that, you know, we had nice material things. We had, you know, we had Rockaware. That's when Rockaware was hot, you know, South Pole, all of that jazz. We had the fresh right ones, all of it, right? So I didn't really know we didn't have a ton of money until, I guess, my mom and dad kind of separated, and then they kind of shed a ton of light on that. So after they separated, I was about in eighth grade. I kind of started going off the rails in terms of started getting into fights and, you know, doing all of this and doing all of that. But, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't place a huge emphasis on, like, you know, academics and things of that nature. But my average and my not trying was a lot different than, you know, the average individual. My average was 3.3 GPA, not trying, being in AP and honors classes, whereas, someone else could be, not even getting a 1.0 or something like that. So I was always a very bright kid, but I never really applied myself. And what really kind of sparked my change to actually, go down a personal development journey was being in my high school graduation and seeing people who I felt weren't necessarily intellectually superior than me graduate higher than me in my class. Because something that I always had was like, I was always a very fierce competitor. So when I saw that, I'm like, man, okay, so I graduated, like 30th in my class without even trying. So imagine if I applied myself. And that's the kind of principle that I kind of take with me. I took with me then, and I take that same approach now, whereas I'm really trying to see what I'm capable of. So once I went through college, I got my accounting degree at Northern Illinois University. I still wasn't really, heavily focused on like finances and wealth building or anything of that nature. But I had kind of a reality check because I graduated. I'm getting this accounting degree, about to make 60K a year, and then I realized, I got to start making better decisions with my money. Because at that point, I was about 7K in credit card debt, spring break trips and buying stuff I didn't need. And then I went in, I bought a brand new car, like it was even my junior or senior year of college, and car note $400 a month, basically. And I was making like $1,000 a month at that point in college. So I'm living literally paycheck to paycheck. And I'm like, this is definitely not the way. So after I graduated and I started my job at PwC, one of the big four accounting firms, I really placed a huge emphasis on really becoming financially literate. So I literally spent the next year reading a ton of books. I think I read 24 books back in, I think that was 2018. So I spent that whole year basically just trying to figure out how I can think like, the successful people think. So I started reading books like ton of John Maxwell books. I read The Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I read The Millionaire Next Door, and so on and so forth. And that just really helped shape my mindset and kind of reprogram it from a poverty mindset to that of a wealth mindset. So that's what I recommend, the first step for any and everyone. You really got to realize what you lack and then kind of shore up some of those weaknesses. And it's not going to be an overnight process. And I definitely want to put emphasis on that because a lot of people want that instant gratification, and you're not going to get it because you got to think about it. If you spent, 20 years of your life being programmed to do the exact opposite of what you need to be doing, that's not going to change in a year. It's not going to change in 2 years. It's going to be a lengthy process. Although I do believe, if you put extreme amount of focus in 6 months or a year, you can see substantial results. So essentially, after that period of time where I was just gaining all that knowledge and reshaping my mindset, I went out and I decided I was going to start in real estate. So I started actually working for one of my fraternity brothers who flips houses on the south side of Chicago. So every day after I left my auditor job at PwC, I was going to his job site and I'm putting in work. I'm learning how to frame walls. I'm learning how to put up drywall. I did the demo, and he actually let me shadow him from the acquisition standpoint, where he's acquiring the property and he's touring it with different contractors to get estimates all the way from demo throughout to the finishings of the project, and him exiting his position by selling. So that paid a ton of dividends, because even though, I was trading my time for free, I was getting so much valuable knowledge and being able to ask all these dumb questions that you won't get to ask on the internet or whatever. Just having access to someone who's been doing it for, 13, 14 years just paid a ton of dividends. It really helped a ton. So after that period, I went out and I started searching for my property, and I ended up getting a duplex with a finished garden unit. We call it a garden. It was basically a basement unit. So it's essentially a 3-unit building. And then I renovated that. And I've been house hacking ever since. And right now I'm shopping for the next one. So that's
For sure.
a long-winded intro into where I am right now.
For sure, for sure. A couple of things I want to touch on. It's interesting that you mentioned, in college you weren't making the best decisions financially, but once you receive that offer, you're like, you know what? I kind of got to change things. I got to get things together. And also the interest in real estate. So what I like about that is you had that self-reflective piece. You're like, all right, cool. I got to change something. And then you found something you're interested in, which is real estate.
and you put in the work, you put in the time, the sweat equity, so to speak, to learn from somebody who's done it. You know, even though, as you mentioned, you're trading time for free, but that knowledge is priceless, and I'm sure it helped you as you renovated that first property.
For sure, yeah. I know I would have made so many more mistakes if I didn't have, go through that process. Because even though I was a rookie, it was like I kind of wasn't a rookie because I knew certain tricks of the trade that, the average individual who's starting out wouldn't know from a construction standpoint.
For sure, for sure. So the property you purchased, was it in need of a lot of rehab? Was it like a total gut job?
It wasn't a total gut. So, in terms of the actual bit, the scope of repairs, we did some roof repairs. We rebuilt the chimney. In terms of the interior, we basically redid the entire kitchens over. Took out all the cabinets. I actually added a wall in there to make it flush, and then I moved the plumbing around, moved the gas line around to make the kitchen more functional. And then we put new ceramic tile throughout the kitchen, as well as the bathrooms, new subway tile in the bathrooms as well, new vanities, new toilets. I put new ceiling fans throughout the property as well as painted throughout, replaced some trim here and there. But it was mostly cosmetic, but a little bit more cosmetic than the normal cosmetic. It wasn't just paint and throwing some new carpet down. It was a little bit more than that. So it wasn't a ton, but definitely about, I think overall, I probably put in like 65, 70K.
Got you. Did you do one of the special loan programs?
Yeah, so I used FHA 203K loans. And for those that aren't familiar with that, obviously FHA is a part of the Federal Housing Administration. It's one of the loans that's for low to moderate income borrowers. But 203K is a subset of that that allows you to include the renovation costs in the actual loan. So it's super beneficial for those who want to get in and basically have like I would say flip on wheels, essentially, or renovation on wheels, because it has a lot of guidelines in place that protect the borrower from basically getting screwed by contractors. But you still have to be on your P's and Q's because that stuff still can happen.
Definitely. And what was that process like? Just, being a first time home buyer and managing that rehab. Did you find it to be a bit easier because you had some experience, walking through houses and rehab, or were there some challenges along the way?
No, it was definitely some challenges. So, even though that experience helped, but it didn't help enough. So, just to give you some more color to the story, while I was purchasing this property and doing my due diligence, I was in busy season at PwC. So, if anybody knows what Big Four accounting is and how those busy seasons go, it's crazy. So, I was literally working 70 to 80 hour weeks at a time. Wow, doing my due diligence and purchasing the property. So it was a ton of things I missed. And that was just out of just being sheer exhausted mentally from, the day to day in my 9 to 5. Well, it was really like 9 to 2 a.m. at that point. But so I missed certain things, like little things that I shouldn't have missed. Like the whole time I was doing my renovations, I thought I had central air throughout the units. And one day, I went to my contractor. I'm like, is the air working? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, the central air. He's like, you don't have AC units. What are you talking about? I'm like, so that was like another 5K that I had added on. But I just learned so much, especially like doing due diligence with contractors. One thing I made a mistake with, I didn't get three estimates. I kind of just went with my first referral. So my realtor actually referred the contractor that I used, and I kind of trusted her, and coupled with the fact that they flip houses together, and their work was quality. But obviously, him having a vested interest in those projects, being that his money is involved, it's a little bit different. But I learned a lot about, doing your due diligence with contractors. I learned from a 203K perspective, your contractor needs to be very liquid in terms of, having those reserves up front to be able to front load some of the material as well as some of the labor costs, or it can really delay your project. I really learned a ton about, red flags to look for when contractors are actually, on the job. And in terms of the renovation, I really learned a lot as well. Because even though I wasn't supposed to be doing some of the work, I did a ton of the work. And at some point, to speed up the progress of the project, mm-hmm. I started hiring my own trades, and then I started buying my own material as well, right. To move the project along a little bit quicker. And then probably the biggest mistake I made was being cheap. So initially, you know, going through the process of getting a 203K, when I got my bid on repairs, I was going to do just like a basic job in terms of the kitchen. I was going to keep some of the cabinets and just kind of repaint in the bathroom. I was going to keep the vanity and kind of and repaint and sand and whatever. And then I was going to keep the toilets. I wasn't going to do anything with ceiling fans. I was going to keep the doors that they had in there, even though some were different than others in the same unit. Like, I was going to basically, I had kind of a revelation that if I'm going to do it, I need to do it right. And as a result of that, you know, the ARV of the property jumped substantially from what we expected it to be originally. So it did pay a ton of dividends, although I had to go into debt a little bit to, you know, make the project work. So I went into probably like 20K, extra 20K of debt personally, just to make sure we had the finishes that we needed. But I'm going to make that, you know, tenfold on the back end when I refinance, because I intend on doing a cash out refi and then, you know, rolling that money into the next project. So definitely learned a lot, but I definitely recommend, you know, if you have the stomach for it, if you have the risk tolerance, you can jump in and do a renovation for your first project. This is not something I necessarily wanted to do. It was something that the market made me do, because originally I wanted a turnkey property, but mm-hmm. I was really impatient. I think I looked for like 6 months and everything was out of my price range, because at the time the multifamily market in Chicago, it was like booming, you know, mm-hmm. everything was super high price. If you wanted something fully renovated, you were going to pay a pretty large premium. And that's the same situation that you're dealing with now. Even in all these times of uncertainty, like we just had a 3-unit hit the market and first day, like 6 offers, wow. For 20K. Like crazy wow. numbers. And I know the individual who actually did that rehab, and he got it for 75K and put 200 wow. into it. So it's like, it's so much opportunity. But just know, if you're buying turnkey, you're definitely going to pay a premium for sure.
For sure. For sure. Well, so there's a couple of things I want to pull out of that. So the first thing is, you mentioned that you were in busy season, and you know, the reality of it is, some people might've said, you know, hey, you did, maybe this is not for me right now, but maybe we need to pause this project. But you just figured out a way to keep it going the best you could. And, you know, like you said, you there were some rough patches in there. There were some lessons learned along the way, but you kept going. A lot of people might have said, you know, maybe once this is done, I'll just sell it. I don't want to deal with it. Or, you know, maybe they would not have followed through. But I think it's important for people to understand and to realize a lot of the learning you're going to do is through experience, but you can't give up. You got to keep going. And just use it to get better. You know, like you said, you started hiring your own trades. But if you didn't, you know, if you didn't take any step forward, you wouldn't even have had that opportunity to be at the point to say, you know what, let me take some of this control into my own hands. So I think it's great that you kind of persevered through the challenges and saw it through to the end.
Definitely. And I think one thing that really helped was really having extreme accountability, because even though I knew, you know, some of the things was like my contractor's fault, at the end of the day, I knew who hired the contractor. Like I did. So I really had to really just be extremely accountable and just really figure things out along the way. I had no downtime to be sad, you know, mope around. I really just had to take action. And I even put in some sweat equity myself, you know, to save, you know, a couple thousand dollars. So, like, I did a ton of painting. Especially like in my basement, I painted like most of the trim in both of my duplex units. So you just really have to, one, focus on your mindset, because that's really what's going to carry you along through any rough patches. Like, if your mindset is strong, you'll be fine. But you know, if you have any weaknesses in your mindset, then it's definitely going to be times where you're going to want to quit. But that's where that persistence kind of comes into account. And then you just got to really just be super accountable, because after all, every decision you make, you control. You control that decision, whether, you know, it's hiring somebody, whether it's, you know, choosing to put one finish versus another finish. Like, for example, in my basement, I put laminate flooring. And at the time, you know, I didn't know laminate flooring was trash, but I figured that out pretty quickly. So that's a mistake that I'll pay for in the future, since I was actually living in the basement unit. So, yeah, just be super, super accountable. And once you have that extreme set of accountability, then you actually realize that you are in control. So that's what's dope about it. On the flip side, like, although you're responsible for everything, you have control over everything. And some people don't believe that they have control over, you know, certain things in their life. But if you believe you have control over it, now you're able to dictate your outcome. Like, now you're able to believe, even though you're not sure if something's going to work, in the back of your mind, it's like, okay, I know it's going to work because I'm going to make it work because I'm in control. So I think that's what's really dope about, you know, being super accountable for all of your actions, decisions, et cetera.
For sure. For sure. And then from there, what was it like just finding tenants, being a first time landlord? Like, what was that whole experience like? And how many years ago was that?
That was in 2019. So I bought it March 2019. Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
Just hit my year anniversary. Now looking for the next one. But nice. That was a really cool process in terms of, you know, finding tenants and things of that nature. Because being that, you know, I worked for this large company, we had a large emphasis on creating systems to streamline processes. So in terms of, like, you know, screening tenants and things of that nature, I just created systems to help, you know, streamline that. So one thing I did that was super beneficial, and what I teach in my house hacking course, is that you should have a pre-screening form, because you don't want to necessarily waste time talking to a ton of tenants or showing the property to tenants that's not even qualified, you know, to rent this apartment. So I created a form where individuals that were interested had to fill out beforehand. You know, if they didn't meet the requirements, they would, you know, basically get a rejection later within the form. So that way, you know, anyone I was showing the property to, I knew was qualified. And from there, I would just have to, you know, verify their pay stubs, verify their employment, talk to their previous landlord, et cetera, et cetera. So that was pretty cool. The one thing where I had a bottleneck in the process was Section 8. So I do have one Section 8 tenant. And although Section 8 is definitely a great program, Chicago, I think, kind of sucks in terms of their process for onboarding new Section 8 landlords, because they literally have a defined timeline for every single step in the process. And some take way longer than they should, but they literally stick to that timeline. And because they have this defined timeline or whatever, they can take their time with it. Because right. Now they know, okay, I have 6 business days to do this. Okay, even though it takes 30 seconds to do it, I have 6 business days, so why not, you know, be a little bit lazier than I should. So that's one bottleneck I had in the process. I had no idea about, you know, how Section 8 worked or anything like that, but that was one kind of rough experience. I failed a couple of inspections, but being that, you know, I had to go back and fix those things, it made my property a little bit safer. So I guess in hindsight, I'm grateful for Section 8 in that regard, but finding tenants was really good. I learned a lot about just screening in general, because screening is so very important. Because you're not screening your tenants effectively, you're going to have issues that could have been avoided. But ultimately, you really just got to do the best of your ability. So I did a ton of reading on, you know, how to screen tenants, how to do property management and things of that nature, which paid a ton of dividends. So I've been pretty smooth from this standpoint, collected rent for every month since, you know, my tenants have been there. None have been late. Obviously Section 8 is going to pay on time every month, but you know, it's been a really, really great experience. And I really enjoy being a great landlord, because I never experienced that. And I think a lot of us in the Black community probably haven't experienced that either. Like this past weekend, actually a couple of days ago, I gave my tenants, because I have 2 women, I gave them both Mother's Day cards. And I put, you know, a couple dollars in there as well. And they just were super, super grateful. And then I thought to myself, like, no one probably really does this. Yeah. Like, if I think back, you know, to growing up with my mom, I know she never got a Mother's Day card from her landlord. You know, they were pretty hands off, but I do understand that it's a community thing. And I know that, you know, the better I am to my tenants, you know, the better I guess they're going to go out in the world and be. And ultimately my goal is, you know, to help them get their own buildings or their own properties, you know, because I actually do credit repair for my tenants free of charge as well. Because ultimately, you know, I want them to be successful as well. So I think it's really great to be a great landlord. And it's not just, you know, answering calls at 2 a.m. to fix toilets. Like, that rarely happens. But, you know, individuals who never had that experience may bring, you know, things like that up that's negative as sound bars for not, you know, taking that next step or convincing someone else not to do it. But you really just got to focus on what you bring to the table and, you know, take that leap of faith, because ultimately you can do it. You just got to believe it, believe in yourself and prosper.
For sure. For sure. I like that. I like that, man. I like that. You know, a lot of people, obviously real estate can be lucrative. It can, you can make a lot of money in that, in the business, but there's a people aspect of it too, right? So you're doing credit repair for your tenants so they can, you know, eventually get their own homes. You're giving them Mother's Day cards. I think that helps with, I'm sure it's going to help with retention if they choose to stay there. And if not, you're setting them up to be, to do well in whatever next part of their life is with good credit. So, you know, I think it's a very good thing you're doing. And I feel like more people in general should not forget about the people aspect of it. But I like the fact that you're doing that because tenants are people too. You know, you're helping them with their credit. You're giving them Mother's Day cards. I think both of those things will help with retention if they choose to stay there. Or, you know, better credit, that's never a bad thing, right? So it can help them get into their own home. So I think it's great. And I feel like people shouldn't forget about the people aspect of real estate, the fact that tenants are people as well. So I think it's a really good thing that you're doing, and you kind of going the extra mile to be a good landlord.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. It's super dope. I think people have to understand, really, with anything that you do, you're in the people business, you know, whether you're selling do-rags or, you know, you're helping, you're doing credit repair, or, you know, you're a mechanic, like, you're in the people business. It's not just really to make money. I think I naturally get a ton of enjoyment just out of helping others, and I think that's really my purpose on this earth. And I think I just really do so mostly through, you know, financial education. But I think it's just super dope just to help individuals, and I think I get a lot of that from my grandma, because she was just really big and just really selfless in the church and things like that, and I think she rubbed off a ton on me, so super grateful for that. And yeah, I'm just really looking forward to continue to help others. It's just, I get so much enjoyment out of it.
For sure. For sure. What part of Chicago is your house in?
So it's in the Park Manor neighborhood.
Okay.
So if you're not familiar, it's like really close to Hyde Park. So where the University of Chicago is. Okay. So that area, even though, you know, it's still up and coming, a lot of great things are coming to that area. So I'm really looking forward to see how the value of my property is going to continue to increase over time. But definitely not selling anytime soon, if ever.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. It's crazy. I want to talk a little more about Chicago. I was in Chicago in July. My sister was living there for some time, so she moved there, and I've never been in Chicago. So, you know, you just hear about what you hear on the news, right? So you hear, you know how it is. And so we were there, man, we were everywhere. We were in Hyde Park. We were different parts of the South Side. We were, you know, we walked around the University of Chicago. We were everywhere. We just loved it. And in my mind, we were on the train. We were all over the place. We went to the United Center. We did everything. And I'm like, the media is crazy. Like, this is a beautiful city. This is a great city. Like, we drove through Englewood. I mean, you see stuff you see in any black neighborhood in America, right? So it wasn't anything that was not normal. We're from New York. It wasn't anything that's not normal. And so I feel like Chicago gets a bad rap, like a lot of urban cities do. But when you go there, it's not what they say it is. So what's your experience being like? Because you're on social media, you have a pretty good following. I'm sure people ask you questions of different things about Chicago. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, so first of all, I didn't live in Chicago all my life. I was in the South Suburbs, but I've been living here now for about 3 or 4 years now. Yeah. So people were telling me the same thing. Even though, you know, the South Suburbs where I grew up definitely was very similar to Chicago. It's a little bit different, but I do think the media really, really overplays things. Like, they make it seem like Chicago is the murder capital of the world, and it's definitely not by far. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, you know, historical stats, the, you know, murder rate in Chicago has stayed consistent since, I think it was honestly since the 80s or 90s. So nothing has changed. The media just, you know, focuses on that. And I really kind of think it's a ploy to get people out the inner cities and, you know, move out to the suburbs, because that's where all the money is coming into the city. You know, everyone flocked to the suburbs to get away from, you know, when We moved into the cities, but now they want to take this property back because everyone wants to be close to downtown. So I think it was a kind of media ploy to to get people out, buy their property for cheap, you know, and build wealth over a period of time. So yeah, Chicago is a really great place. So yeah, I definitely highly recommend, you know, everybody visit it in their lifetimes. Yeah, so many different, you know, great places to visit in terms of, you know, landmarks as well as great places to eat. Summertime Chicago is undefeated. So definitely make sure you check out, you know, Summertime Chicago. All the day parties are lit. So yeah, definitely come to Chicago, check it out. And your perception is definitely going to be way different than, you know, what you'll see if you focus solely on what's in the media.
For sure. For sure. And real estate wise, what does the future look like? I know we talked a bit off camera that you're looking at other properties. But just, I guess, overall, where do you want to be in the near future as far as real estate?
So yeah, definitely looking to, you know, close on my next multi-unit in the next couple of months. And then, you know, after that, I'm going to be right back in the search for another one. So looking to close, at least I want to finish the year with at least 10 units in my rental portfolio. Then I also am looking to do at least two flips this year, which COVID kind of messed up because I was going to use hard money. And really no hard money lenders are lending right now. Those that are, their terms are kind of ridiculous. So now I'm kind of sitting back and waiting to see, you know, where the market is going to go for flip potentials. But, you know, I am looking at something in Indianapolis as well right now, because I do have friends in Indianapolis who, you know, they do all their work themselves. Like, nice. It's actually super, super dope. And I think I'm going to team up with them. We're probably going to do something out here in Indianapolis. Because one is a realtor, and we're all high school friends, which is super dope. Like, she's nice. A realtor. Her husband, who's one of my best friends growing up, he's an electrician. And then, you know, we have all his brothers and sisters. They come together to help with the renovation. So literally from demo to plumbing to electric to, you know, HVAC, all of that, they know how to do, which is super cool. I'm probably going to team up with them to do a flip. But I'm really just trying to increase my rental portfolio and increase my cash flow over time as well as my nest egg, because I just want to be super, super secure. Because one thing that did happen as a result of COVID, I did get laid off. So I was a financial analyst for a commercial real estate developer, but they were in the hospitality industry doing hotels. Literally had to close all, I think we had about maybe 22 or 23 hotels across America. Then we had a couple abroad as well. So I had to close all of the hotels, then had about 13 projects under development, had to halt construction on a ton of those as well, depending on, you know, the stay-at-home orders and whatnot. And then those that they finished, you know, we couldn't really do anything because we couldn't open them. So right. That kind of sucked. But I've been managing. You know, I make way more on the side. So this has been a blessing in disguise. Yeah. But that was honestly, that was the first job I actually really liked. You know, I loved all the people. I loved what I was doing. I was learning a lot. But yeah. Luckily, you know, the skills that I gained over the what I was there for about 6 months, the skills that I gained over that time period, I've been able to translate into, you know, things that I do on the side as well. So it still have paid a ton of dividends, even in that short period of time. Now, I don't know if I'm going to go back in the workplace, but I may, just, you know, to get another 2 or 3K project, because yeah. Need to be able to show that income. And I don't have two right. years of business income right now. So that'll be the only reason I go back, because business has been very well since, you know, I left. I'm able to devote all my time to, you know, my passion. So it's really only up from here.
For sure. For sure. That's great, man. And I know you have a car rental business as well. And I think it's very unique. I don't think I know anybody who has a car rental business. And for a lot of listeners, this would be something unique too. You know, like, of course, focus of the show is real estate, but I always like diving into other entrepreneurial ventures that guests have. So would love to hear about how you got started in the car rental business, and obviously, you know, I follow you, so I see that it's been pretty successful, but we'd just love to hear more about it.
Yeah, so I got started in the car rental business actually because I couldn't find any properties in my budget. So I'm like, man, I got to increase my cash flow. So, you know, after I stopped looking for turnkey properties, I'll dive into the car rental business. And first thing I did was I listed my personal vehicle on this company called Hire Car, where if you think of it as like Airbnb, but for vehicles, where, you know, you rent your car out to individuals who do Uber and Lyft. Or you can use another site called Turo, where you rent your vehicle to individuals for leisure. You know, maybe they're going on a road trip, or maybe their car went out, or had a needed a repair, or got into an accident, and they need to rent your car at a lower rate than what, you know, traditional rental car agency will rent for. So I put my vehicle on there since I didn't need it, because I was in busy season at the time, and I wasn't driving my car because I'm working all these hours, and then they pay for our Ubers back home. And I took the bus to work, which was literally across the street from the apartment I was living in. So I put it on there, and in my first month, I think I made, you know, $1,200. And all I had to do was pay $50 for Uber and Lyft inspection, since I already had the vehicle, and take pictures of it and put it on the site. And that was my first taste at passive income. So I'm like, man, okay, this can be super lucrative. So after that, you know, I went and bought another car. Then I just started acquiring more and more vehicles, started partnering with individuals, as well as partnering with dealerships to get, you know, lucrative financing terms. And it just kind of grew from there. And the business is so dope because you can put up, you know, $1,200, $1,300, $1,500 max, acquire a vehicle, you know, pay for all of the startup costs involved, and then you can rent that vehicle and cash flow anywhere from $400 to $600 a month. So you get your money back in 2.5 to 3.5 months, depending on, you know, how much you rent it for, what kind of vehicle, how much you're paying, et cetera. And then after that, it's really just all profit. So it's super, super lucrative in that sense. And I'm definitely happy, you know, I started up with this because it allowed me to save the income I needed, the capital I needed to put down on my first property relatively quickly. Because originally I had a 1-year plan to kind of save, you know, my earned income from my job. But once I started doing that, I was able to reach my goal in like 2 or 3 months versus waiting a year. And now it's just been, you know, rolling steady. Now I have a whole team around me where now I don't really have to focus on the operation standpoint. So now, yeah, I'm the chief accounting officer for our company. We have a whole team around me now where, you know, I can focus on accounting as well as kind of the financial analyst standpoint to make sure we're renting the vehicles at a certain price to make sure that they're cash flowing what we want. You know, I'm getting to analyze the numbers in terms of the average days rented out of vehicles. And then, you know, analyzing certain costs, making sure, you know, we're not overspending in certain areas. So I'm really doing what I love to do in terms of financial analysts. That's why I'm super grateful. You know, I had that experience for commercial real estate developer because I've been able to translate that to my car rental business as well as my real estate business as well. But, you know, the car rental business is just super, super lucrative. So definitely anyone interested, I do have a blueprint to making passive income in a car rental business. You know, if you find me on Instagram, you'll see the link in my bio and you can check that out if you're anyone interested in getting involved. But, you know, it's definitely, definitely a super, super dope business because of the low startup costs as well as, you know, the possibilities for great cash flow every month. So.
For sure. For sure. That's amazing, man. I like the fact that, you know, your 9 to 5 is helping you in your business endeavors. And, you know, that's a great place to be in.
Yeah. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't pick up on. Like most people I know, like the average individual, they're going to have a job and they're going to focus on, you know, just doing that job and not how the skills that they learn at that job can translate into success on the side as well. And I always recommend, you know, individuals to supplement their 9 to 5 income with, you know, side income as well, because you never know what can happen. And I'm a prime example of that. Because, you know, like I mentioned, you know, I lost my job. I was making $72,000 a year as a financial analyst. But, you know, even though I was making more on the side, but that would have never happened if I never put one foot in front of the other and started learning about financial literacy, you know, started, you know, diving into real estate, started diving into side hustles, started diving into learning the stock market, et cetera, et cetera. So now I put myself in a position where, you know, I can lose my job at any moment and I can be perfectly fine and even make more. But the average person can't do that unless, you know, they get outside their comfort zone and actually, you know, grow through all the growing pains that it takes to reprogram your mindset, as well as, you know, learn how to be financially literate and take the right financial moves to put themselves in good position. So I feel like everything I've been through it up until this point was preparing me for this moment. And I think it's super dope, and I'm happy I stuck with everything that I'm doing.
For sure, for sure. And I really like that. I think a lot of times in our community, we don't know any better, and we kind of just rely on the employer, but we don't realize that we have so much skill, we have so much talent, we have so many, there's so many more abilities and possibilities outside of our 9-to-5. So I do agree with you 100%. It's a matter of transforming our minds, the way we think, because we're capable of so much more than we really know.
Definitely. We really are. And I saw that every day when I was working at, you know, that commercial real estate developer, because it was a ton of people who I knew, like, you guys are so damn smart, like way smarter than me, especially in this particular field. But I know I make, you know, a little bit more money than you on the side. And that propels my income, you know, tenfold to where you're probably making. But yeah, I really emphasize that, you know, people should monetize their genius. I think everyone has skills, or they're good at something where, you know, they can teach someone else and they can help them make money or make their lives a little bit better in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But you really just got to put yourself out there and believe in yourself to do it. And that's really the first step. And also, I think it's super important. You have to kind of delay gratification, because it's not going to happen overnight. And it's not going to be easy. And I think a lot of people focus on the finished product when they see successful individuals, and they don't realize, you know, what all went into becoming the individual that they are in this particular moment. So your income is only going to grow to the extent you do. So focus on your personal development as well, and then just go for it. Like, don't worry about the mistakes, because they're going to happen. Don't worry about, you know, having pristine quality initially, because it's going to suck at first. You're going to look at, you know, your product, your original product versus, you know, your product years down the line, and be like, wow, this is like night and day. But it's all about just progressing every day and just becoming better every day, and just doing, you know, one or two things every day to propel you towards your goal. You don't have to hit everything overnight. It can be step by step, you know, over day, and that adds up. And I remember Josh Lifestyle from Corporate Coke and Smack. He said something along the lines of that on Twitter, where, you know, you don't have to focus on home runs. You can focus on the singles and the doubles and the triples, and over time, that's going to add up. So you don't have to hit a home run out the gate. You know, just focus on getting on base and continuing to build on that.
I agree 100%. For sure. I know you have a lot of courses and different resources. So can you talk through just some of the course offerings you have?
Yeah, so my newest course is called House Hacking 101, How to Fire Your Landlord and Live for Free. So that course basically dives into the process of house hacking your first multi-unit property, or you can do it with a single family as well. So I walk you through from, you know, the mindset piece to the personal finance, all the way through to, you know, defining your property criteria, so you know exactly what you're looking for, how to do your due diligence on, you know, hiring a realtor, hiring a lender, different financing strategies that you can use to purchase your property, and also walk into the property analysis, so you know you're getting a good deal. And then we walk into acquiring your tenants, you know, looking for red flags, et cetera, et cetera. So I literally walk you through the process A to Z. So that's why I call it the blueprint. And then I also have the blueprint, you know, for the car rental industry as well, while walking you through the process A to Z as well, from, you know, purchasing vehicles to financing to managing your business as well. So those are the two courses that I have right now. I also have some tools as well for property analysis that I have on Gumroad. So you can find all of those at gumroad.com/theinfamousCPA. And then I also have some free resources as well. So if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter at theinfamousCPA, I have 80 free books, free ebooks that you can check out, all on like finance, business, mindset, et cetera. And also I have like a free budgeting tool. I have like a free, you know, credit card tracker tool for, you know, any individual paying off credit card debt or just looking to make strategic credit moves. And I have a couple other resources as well in that link in bio. So definitely check those out. And I'll be putting more personal finance things out, which is next on my list. Personal finance is like, you know, something really near and dear to my heart. So I have a couple of things on the back burner for that I'm looking forward to releasing in the next couple of months to, you know, help people with their personal finances.
For sure, for sure. A lot of good resources there. And what are a couple of tips that you would give to someone who wants to purchase their first home, invest in their first property, but they're kind of scared? You know, they heard real estate is cool. They don't really know where to begin. What would you say to somebody in that position?
I would say really the first step is you have to acknowledge the fact that you can do it. Like if you don't believe, no one else will. And believe me, you're going to have naysayers. You're going to have individuals, whether that's friends, family, whether that's, individuals you don't even know on the internet. If you put that out into the universe, you're going to have people that may try to tear your dream down. But if you have that belief, first and foremost, that you can do it, you should be able to persevere through everything. So first and foremost, believe you can do it. Then from there, really do a deep dive and focusing on that education. Because you want to be educated, but you have to acknowledge as well that your education through books can only go through far. You're going to have to take some leap to get that experience in order to truly learn, everything that's going to go into it. So in times when you're fearful, what worked for me is really just taking a step forward. It was times where I was thinking about hiring a realtor, and then I was like, man, I don't know. I don't really got the money right now. But I told myself, anytime I have a doubt or anytime I have, a fearful thought that I was going to do something that was going to move me closer. So I hired my realtor before I had the money. I started touring properties before I had the money. And from there, things just started to fall in place because now I'm showing the universe that not only do I really want this from a mindset, from a thought perspective, I'm showing with my actions. So now, those opportunities just started to attract basically to everything that I was already doing. So whenever you have that fearful moment, just take a step forward, and figure it out along the way. You don't have to plan everything out. Don't get stuck in analysis paralysis. Just put one foot in front of the other and just keep making progress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, great interview. I appreciate you coming on. And I think it's just cool to see your journey. You know, in the beginning, you were in a lot of credit card debt. You didn't really know what was happening. And it seemed as though once you got that first job, it hits you like, all right, I got to get some things together. And you know, kind of work towards building up your credit, your finances, and getting that first property. But before getting that first property, just shadowing someone who is in homes and going through renovations, which helped you when you did your own, and then helping your tenants and having the rental car business. It seems like things have just kind of grown as you've gone forward and taken action. So I think it's a great story, man.
Yeah, I thought he was going out again. I'm like, wait,
Oh man,
because it
I would have
froze
been
a little
sick.
bit.
I would have been sick.
But no, man, yeah, I'm definitely grateful for this journey. It's been a great couple of years, and really just looking forward to, what the future holds. Because I know, I really don't know what I'm capable of. Even though I've seemed like I've accomplished a lot, I do realize that, I still have a lot to do. I still, don't know what I can do. So just really looking forward to seeing what I can do and keeping that mindset and really just challenging myself and, my next endeavor. So definitely grateful for coming. Grateful for you inviting me to come on this show. I
Sure.
know you have some very esteemed guests, so
You're
definitely excited to be in that company.
one of them, man.
appreciate it.
For sure. For sure. Awesome. Well, thank you all for tuning in. You have his social media handles. He mentioned a short while ago, but appreciate you all tuning in to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. And you can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ziprecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.